Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hi guys, this is Alice. I would like to let you know this episode is not a part of our Stalin series, but due to recent events, we decided this was more urgent than our dead friend Stalin. Enjoy the show.
Greetings, comrades. This episode is going to be more about the recent news than anything else, but it's there because I think it's really important to speak about radicalism and trolls and other major issues here, and why you should be careful about everything you read on the internet, really. For starters, I want to speak about a movie which just came out in Russia. The movie is called Matilda, and it's a movie by Alexei Uchitel. And the movie is just about our ex-emperor Tsar Nicky II, well, in his youth days. It was also co-financed by the Ministry of Culture, and at least because of the reasons that, you know, this year is the 100th anniversary of the October Revolution, which will be, you know, celebrated in Russia this year. And the movie is about the relationships of then-future Emperor Nicholas II and ballerina Matilda Kshesinskaya. And everything would be kind of nice and okay, because this is not a documentary, this is a fictional movie, it's just a romantic historical piece about how young Nicky II, before he even became emperor, even though he was married at the time, sort of, he had this arranged marriage and everything, but he fell in love with this Matilda, this ballet dancer, and yeah, that's about it. It's about his love, his romance for this dancer. Now, the problem here is that, and I didn't know this fact before, the problem here is that Nicky II is officially a saint of the Orthodox Church of Russia. I don't know exactly when that happened, but apparently he is. And, well, even though he shot cannons at his own people, he got to sainthood just because he was the last tsar and was violently murdered by Bolsheviks, and, I don't know. People claim that he has icons of him and stuff, and I don't really understand this fact, and I'm pretty sure some Orthodox people here will be, who listen to our show will be able then to comment this on the page and on the Facebook comments. But yeah, the idea is it's an artistic movie about how Nicholas II had this love affair with Matilda. And the problem is, due to the Russian current laws about how insulting the feelings of the believers is a crime, yeah, this has gone under this thing. Because, for starters, there is Natalia Poklonskaya, who used to be the chief procurator of the Crimean kind of peninsula when the Russians took over there, but now she's a deputy of Gosduma. And she just heard about this movie, it wasn't even out yet, and she just dropped on to defend Nicholas II, because she considered that this movie kind of degrades Nicholas II completely. Now, and that is very weird, because I don't understand exactly why Nicky's saint, but he is. But this is an artistic movie. It's not a documentary. It's not mocking him. It's just showing him in his, you know, him being very humane, growing up in this noble society, showing him as a real person with real emotions, and, like, you know, feeling this love, which he knows can't go on because, you know, he has this arranged marriage that he has to go into, and he's just a young person there. He's not even the emperor there. It seems kind of like a very heartfelt and humane thing. Well, it turns out that there are a lot of problems with this, because Miss Poklonskaya, who was arrived here from Kremer, she stated that, yeah, that this movie is basically evil and terrible. And her argument started with the fact that the leading role of Nicky himself was played by German actor Lars Eidinger, who, kind of, according to Poklonskaya and her chosen handpicked expert, was put into a porno actors bunch, because she complained that Nicky is played by someone who's done porn. Well, he has done some shoots with Peter Greenaway, and the role of Matilda is being played by a Polish actress, Michalina Olszanskaya, and she also had played previously a role which was kind of interesting. She played a girl who was kind of a terrorist. She played it previously. She played a girl who had suffered a lot in her childhood, and so she took her revenge by committing a terror act. So it's weird, because, yeah, the fact that these actors in this specific movie had done some kind of questionable roles, according to Poklonska, even though they're just actors, yeah, this alone was a reason why this movie was evil and terrible and should be banned. So she just openly, in her speech, this deputy of Gosduma stated that we do not need such fascism and such heresy and such, basically, humiliation of our traditional Christian values. And that seems kind of weird, but what happened next was like, even crazier. You see, there is an Orthodox radical organization. It's called the Christian State, the Holy Russia. They are not very much recognized by the Orthodox Church. They are, well, I'll use this term, very weird radical cultists. They're something like ISIS, but Orthodox. And they believe that their holy Russia is an extra holy state, and that everything there should be basically theocratic or something. So these guys, these very radical dudes, they offended the authors of Matilda, and they wrote a huge letter to them, claiming that this movie, this artistic movie, which shows just this very humane Nicky II, is doing just that it is insulting the feelings of the believers. And they threatened violence to those cinemas where this movie would be shown. Further on, what happened was that burnings of cinemas by this organization started long before even the movie premiered. And this is this is from internetsabor.org, which is a news site in Russia, which is dedicated in the name of truth and respect of the Orthodox Church there. And they have an article, Matilda in Fire. The burnings of the cinemas have started long before the premiere of the movie. It was written on the 4th of September 2017 by Mohaninya Vera. They burnt the studio of Alexei Uchitel. They basically took a bunch of gasoline and burnt a cinema, which was approximately 200 meters from the place where the Tsarist family was shot. And yeah, they burnt it. Another of these cinemas was basically crashed into by a car, which was like a micro bus car, which was full with the balance of gas and kind of canisters of gasoline. And yeah, this was done, and it burned down, and the driver of this microbus, he declared that he's against the showing of this movie Matilda. The responsibility for this was taken by this Christian state Holy Russia, or Chrystianskaya Gosudarstvo Svitaya Rus', and they once again warned that the cinemas will be really burned in the case that they show this Matilda. Now, something has been done, but the response hasn't been very active, especially since you know how the police works in Russian government. And recently, one of the guys who really burned stuff, one of these guys got arrested until the 11th of November. He was arrested as a member of this active organization, Christian State, the Holy Russia. And there was an interview about this. And one of them, Alexander Byanov, declared that everyone who watches that movie needs to burn. So, next to the cinema, they burned a bunch of empty cars, right next to the cars that they burned, like, they just burned cars who were parked next to the cinema because of this movie, and they posted notes on the cars which weren't burned, but were just standing right next to this, with the text on them, "You will burn for Matilda." Interestingly enough, this is a really radical situation here, because the movie wasn't even shown back then, and when they started showing them, yeah, these mass burnings started. But very few people have been arrested, and this Christian state organization isn't even, like, they're not saying that they're terrorists. So they basically just have arrested some people. They aren't cracking down on this organization. Even though they have a YouTube channel, which is, by the way, signed up for and subscribed by 26,000 people, and they started in 2012, and you know, if you look at their videos, you can see interesting video answers to questions such as, can an Orthodox woman use cosmetics and makeup? Or another one, can you get possessed by watching horror movies? And now, they've been looked at, as it's reported there by the Russian government, but really, there haven't been any huge crackdowns there. And yeah, what they started basically doing in January this year, when they found out about this movie of Alexei Uchitel's, was they started spreading public announcements, which stated, quote, "Every banner, every piece of advertisement, everything about the information of the showing of the movie Matilda will be looked at as your willingness to mock the saints of the Orthodox Church and as a provocation that could lead to a Russian Maidan." So, yeah, these guys are radicals who burn cars, and who burn cars of innocent people who are just bystanders, who burn cinemas, who actually were preparing for even more mass burnings, but it was kind of stopped because one of the guys was caught while with tons of gasoline, just, you know, within cans. He was waiting just to pour it on the cinema in the night. He was arrested. And then he was just let go and was shown on the television because, you know, hey, that's kind of not cool. You shouldn't burn things. So these are the modern-day radicals in Russia. And they support this burning of this movie, which is essentially just a historical romantic drama, as I think. I don't know. It's like if you would start burning cinemas because, I don't know, if Scottish people would start burning cinemas because Braveheart was showing, and that's totally not historically accurate, okay? So that's kind of weird. And also this dude who who was arrested for the attack on the cinema Cosmos. He was 39 years old. His name was Denis Murashov. And it's kind of interesting because he is the echelon, the standard of those people who are to this day in Russia called the warrioring Orthodox patriots, if you would judge for his social network stuff. He's a radical believer. He's a homophobe. He's a fan of football. And though, you know, he is, however, on the list of mental ill people, he's on the list of people with mental illnesses, however. So in Odnoklassniki, or, you know, Classmates, which is a Russian social network, on his page, he writes, quote, "Orthodox people, do not take electronical documents of any kind. Saint Paisy Sviatogorets Afonsky and many other old saints from the elder days warned us about it. Taking and using electronic documents, that means leaving Christ behind, and it is a sin." And, yeah, this Paisy Afonsky, he's a cult figure to these radical Orthodox believers, these radical groups. Paisy Afonsky, he also recommended leaving your passports behind, throwing them out, and recommended just not using anything where some code was put in there, because that might contain the symbols from the devil. And there's another writing just next to it of this guy's wall, and it says, "If the new fascist power in Ukraine will allow gay weddings, then that means this state is from the devil." This is kind of interesting because all his writings are also kind of, they are pictures of churches there, and he's also posted pictures where he's just like swimming somewhere. And the weirdest part is that he also has a bunch of pictures of his football matches and kind of in the background of the World Championship 2008 symbolics. And this is kind of interesting because such things happen there, and they're very radical. And you think about it, this is what happens, like I've mentioned in the PDRP, when you become totally radicalized. These are Russian Orthodox terrorists. They are literally terrorists, but nobody's calling them that way. And these guys, again, think that if gay marriage is allowed, that means fascists did it. And this episode is all about how to be a fascist and fight against fascism at the same time, because, you know, it seems kind of oxymoronic that a fascist government would ever allow, you know, gay weddings. But apparently they do. And what this leads into is not so much Matilda, but who are these anti-fascists and how these terrorist organizations and other paramilitary radical organizations in Russia claim that they are fighting against fascism. Because even these burnings of a cinema and everything, yeah, even they are in a way presented as a battle against fascism. And not just that. Here, let's just do a quick recap about who are the people in Russia today who are mostly concerned about fighting against fascism. So, first and foremost, the major anti-fascists, obviously, are the Donetsk and Luhansk separatists, who are, you know, actually Russian-funded and supplied mercenaries, but doesn't matter. Because, see, they're fighting against the fascists in Ukraine. And, in a way, they also want to fight against fascists everywhere, especially the guys in Great Britain, because apparently, as I posted in one of my previous modern-day news segments, the people of Donetsk and like Russians in general shall only be happy when the Great Britain is conquered. So yeah, apparently Great Britain is also full of fascists and completely, totally fascist. Then of course we have Mr. Putin himself, who is constantly fighting against the fascists and who had succeeded at this by liberating Crimea again from the fascist Ukraine. And is now, according to himself and his propaganda, the only force in the world that can stand against the fascist imperial West. Then there's also my previously mentioned radical Orthodox organization, which are just very weird people, and I think that, you know, Orthodox people all around the world should kind of post things about that you really shouldn't do that, because that's not very Orthodox of them, what's going on there right now. Then, obviously, there are the National Bolsheviks. They are, let me not even get to how this is wrong when you call yourselves National Bolsheviks and your flag's essentially Nazi Germany's flag, except you replace swastika with a hand grenade, a black hand grenade. They're a terrorist organization. They're very hateful towards us, the fascists in the Baltic states. And they're very, very anti-fascist, because that's written in their program, and they claim to be the most anti-fascist organization out there fighting for equal rights, except when it comes to, you know, minorities, because they hate those guys. They especially hate non-ethnic Russians from all the stans, like from Kazakhstan and Turkmenistan and all those places, and Azerbaijan too, and all these Caucasus people, Tajikistan. They hate all the foreign workers that come to Russia. They hate them too, but they're totally anti-fascist, absolutely. Then we also have Mr. Zhirinovsky, the Gosduma deputy, leader of the Liberal Democrats Party, who is in reality a very controlled opposition of the UNRC, United Russia Party, and he's basically a mouthpiece for Putin, stating the most radical things possible so that Putin himself wouldn't have to say that. And he's a guy who, often in public and on television, and even in debates, where when they actually get some foreigners there, he actually openly calls for nuking of fascist United States of America and fascist Europe, because we are all crazy evil fascists. Me, you, everyone who's listening to this show, yeah, everyone's a fascist, and we should totally be nuked, because we spread our NATO fascism to everyone. Evil fascists, evil gay fascists at that. And, interestingly enough, that when Trump got elected, this guy held a massive, massive celebration with his party to celebrate how the United States would move away from their democratic fascist policies, but that turned out to be a dud, as after the new sanctions that Trump signed on 2nd of August, he's also now on the enemy number one list as the world's largest fascist, because obviously everyone who's not pro-Kremlin is a filthy fascist. Then, there are the Putin's biker gangs, who are not allowed in the EU, the so-called Night Wolves. These guys are dudes who are not allowed in the European Union for their every year rides to Berlin on their bikes to kind of post a Soviet flag right next to Reichstag, that way memorializing Russia's basically Soviet great victories there. They're all friends of Vladimir Putin. And the president of this Night Wolves Club, which they're very, very, very anti-fascist, the president of this is Alexander Zlatostanov, whose name is, an official name, his nickname is Surgeon, and he's very much tied to Vladimir Putin and Kremlin's politics. These bikers, who are usually, you know, bikers would be rebelling against things, they'd be, you know, anti-authority guys. No, basically they are another of the Kremlin's soft power instruments in the countries of the ex-USSR. The president of this club openly praises Putin, from whom, by the way, he acquired the Medal of Honor for active work in the patriotic raising of the youth, and he fights against protesters for democracy, because he's also a leader of the organization called Anti-Maidan, who believes that any protest actions against the current government are fascist, anti-patriotic, and very evil. These guys, these Night Wolves, who are, again, not allowed in the European Union, they're also racist, by the way, and very homophobic. But yeah, these guys actively support the annexion of Crimea. They actively support their very anti-fascist friends in Donetsk and Luhansk. These guys, when the annexation was going on, these guys were among those who were patrolling in the streets of Crimea, and they participated in taking over Ukrainian military bases there, and they captured and abducted at least one Ukrainian army officer. These Night Wolf guys are also volunteers in Donbass, and their greatest hope is of unification of the Russian world. That would mean taking Ukraine, taking Belarus, reconquering us, maybe grabbing Alaska one day from the United States. And that's kind of crazy. These things are very active here, and they always kind of participate in our politics. They are one of the tools which the Russian government uses right now to influence our own politics, because before the 12th elections in 2014, the autumn 2014, among the bunch of like, you know, these political newspapers which are spread everywhere when elections come, there was a newspaper which was printed by the so-called Latvian Russian Union. And Edvins Putin was there on the main cover, and he was sitting on this biker, and he was this biker representing these night wolves supporting these things. Weirdly enough, for this Putin guy, this was the third biker club. He previously, by the way, had worked in the party Sovereignty. When responding to questions about why did he join these Night Wolf guys, he responded that they are ideologically close to him, and that he likes the idea of the friendship of nations. So he wanted to join these Night Wolves. And how he describes the organization is that they are the absolutely apolitical organization. And, he also commented on the fact of how this surgeon, this leader of the Russian Night Wolves, openly praises Putin and is basically working for him. And he just comments that I think it is completely normal that citizens support their president. He commented on this unification of the Russian world by stating that the unification of the Russian world is all about spiritual values, on the basis of which are the economical ones, and any unification is better than splitting apart. When asked about whether or not this Russian world project would threaten the Baltic countries in any way or form, he responded that, we shouldn't really think so highly of ourselves, that this territory is only necessary for NATO. Russia does not need the Baltic countries whatsoever, but he also responded that he's against spewing hatred from any side whatsoever.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So when he speaks about this not spewing hatred, I'm pretty sure that, he doesn't include for the fact that they have beaten up gay people in the streets, they have beaten up people with a different skin color than they are taking, obviously, these radical terrorist flags from Donetsk and Luhansk on their trip, they were trying at least to, they're doing this ride. Yeah, well, typical Antifa for Russia. Now, I'll get to my point here, because, some of you might have noticed that I'm skeptical about Antifa organizations in America because of this. But, if every anti-fascist around you that you hear about all the time, and you see these people yelling at you about how anti-fascist they are like this, then you're obviously skeptical about everyone who says that they're Antifa or anti-fascist, even though these organizations are not related. It's just that in Russia, they use this term, fighting against fascism, so that they wouldn't have to say that they're pro-Putin. They wouldn't have to say that they're very nationalistic themselves. And for them, I think fascism means something quite different than we and the rest of the world associate with it. Because for us, fascism, for the most part, is these hateful things that are going on right here, this discrimination, this oppression and stuff. But not so in Russia, because, and my theory goes like this, because, you know, they're very, very proud of their great victory in World War II, although they don't call it World War II, they call it the Great Patriotic War, as World War II started in 1939, and they were a part of it, allied with Hitler at the beginning, just saying. But the idea is that, you know, if you would be kind of democratic and nice, then you would state that. You would state that you are based on democratic values. Well, in Russia, they can't really say that because they don't have any democratic values, and the word liberal is used as an insult in modern-day Russian politics. A lot of people speak about the so-called liberists. It's a portmanteau of liberal and pederast, so they just join that together. Again, because liberals are apparently supporters of gay fascists all over the place. So, you know, as they're very, very proud and they're pushing this mega propaganda that this defeat over Nazi Germany was the greatest achievement of the Russia, like, ever made, and as they are quite lacking modern-day achievements these days, and their economy isn't that great, they have to play their patriotic nationalism on something, so they chose this anti-fascist platform. And when they picked it, it was basically so that they could state that they are the good guys, while not mentioning any of the rotten West values, such as, you know, democracy, freedom of speech, you know, all these things that we've grown used to. And it works. It works in the insider propaganda and in the level that there are a lot of people in modern-day Russia who really believe that we over here in the West, and at this point I am in the West because I am in a EU country, and they believe that my country has been ruined by EU, and they believe that NATO is the tool of the devil. Some of them literally believe that, such as these orthodox crazy guys, and I don't even want to call them orthodox because they're literally just terrorists who have nothing in common with real orthodoxy, I think. But yeah, so they just hide their own villainy, basically. They hide their own wicked ideals behind this battle against fascism. And knowing how Putin likes to influence things, he likes to show to his people that he's only against the evil fascist governments of the West, and that actually he likes to show that the people in the Western countries also support him. So that's why they kind of pay off some guys to come from, you know, UK or Canada or United States to Russia and say how nice and pretty everything in Russia is and how Russia is way less corrupt and way less evil than the country they come from. Yeah, they're all like paid people. And in the recent light of events, and, you know, I bought into troll stuff. I really bought into some troll stuff. I got trolled and misled about some things. But then I thought about this, and it's very real that Putin might actually be using these university radicals, the anti-fa radicals of the United States, like the Black Bloc, and they might be just trying to find the most radical anti-fa organization in the United States, and they might be using them for their own goals. Like, recently there was an article about how these anti-fa guys in the United States, that they do terrible things, how they practice with knives and such. And there was an article about how those guys, the Antifa in the United States, they have, like, fully loaded AK-47s in their vans in case some of their protests or some of their actions go wrong. And there was a YouTube video about that when one of them shows off their illegal guns there. But then you think about it, and you might understand that these people might actually not be so radical, because I highly doubt that college kids who wear Che Guevara t-shirts and, I don't know, want to smoke weed every day, probably, or whatever, that these kids are actually, you know, pro-Putinist. I fell for that at one point. I really did. This is why this episode is important for me as well, because if you think about it, it actually helps Putin to be able to kind of quite possibly fund the most radical elements of this Antifa movement and just create bad publicity for them in America, while he can show in his home front that, hey, we're supporting these fighters against fascism and the evil American government is oppressing them. That is because Americans are all fascists, right? And the idea here being is that if you see someone very radical doing some crazy things and posting on YouTube videos, yeah, this might have nothing to do with, like, your regular college kids who are just actually, you know, against real fascism, which is a great goal. But this is This is just all the sign about how even I used to think about these situations and what's going on with this anti-fascist movement in Russia and their paramilitary groups and their terrorists who even call an artistic movie, Matilda, to be a fascist thing. This whole thing comes down to the fact that we've radicalized ourselves and we don't really know how to use the internet. And for this, I would like to quote an article, "Don't Forget the Just for Russian Trolls," by Connor Friedensdorf in The Atlantic. It was written in October 20th, 2017. And he writes about the fact that America's authentic online behavior actually isn't quite as terrible as people like to imagine, and that everyone's not as radical, and when you see something that maybe shocks you and you think, oh no, the other side just did this, whoa, they're all evil, they might not be so. See, in 2015, Adrian Chen wrote a piece called The Agency, which was an impressive look at an operation in St. Petersburg, Russia, where, quote, an army of well-paid trolls, end quote, tried to wreak havoc in American communities. They were fabricating a toxic fume disaster in St. Mary Parish, Louisiana. They were fabricating a fake news about Ebola outbreak in Atlanta, Georgia. And among their other exploits, what happened was that a totally different group of accounts began spreading a rumor that an unarmed black woman had been shot to death by police. They all used the hashtag shocking murder in Atlanta. Here again, the hoax seemed designed to piggyback on real public anxiety. That summer and fall were marked by protests over the shooting of Michael Brown in Ferguson. In this case, a blurry photo purports to show the shooting, as an onlooker narrates. And of course this, other quote from this piece. A Facebook group, Spread Your Wings, described itself as a, quote, community for everyone whose heart is with America, end quote. Spread Your Wings posted photos of American flags and news about how great it was to be an American, but the patriotism rang hollow once you tried to parse the frequent criticisms of Obama, an incoherent mishmash of liberal and conservative attacks that no actual American would espouse, because really these groups, based in Russia, they don't know how American politics work, so they might post liberal attacks to Republican Party, and then they might post conservative attacks towards the Democratic Party, and no one would care. Because what they want to do is that they want to create divides in society. There was also Art Gone Conscious Facebook group, which posted bad art and then tenuously connected it to Obama's foreign policy failures. And obviously self-explanatory celebrities against Obama. And these posts churned out every day by this network of pages, were commented on and shared by the same group of trolls who posted there. It was, quote, a virtual Potemkin village of disaffected Americans. And since then, obviously, everyone has learned that Russian trolls organized anti-immigrant rallies in two states. They post online as Black Lives Matter supporters in one instance, and as members of a Muslim American organization in another one. These guys hope to spark discord among the West, especially in America. So technically, if you think about it, if you ever felt at a complete loss and you just couldn't understand how some of your neighbors could possibly reach certain conclusions about politics or whatever, you might consider that they could have been like targeted by some teens in a Macedonian village who are bent on just tricking them. And it's literally in a village from Macedonia. Because from another article, over the past year, the Macedonian town of Velesh, population 45,000, has experienced a digital gold rush as locals launched at least 140 United States politics websites. These sites have American-sounding domain names, such as worldpoliticos.com, trumpvision365.com, usconservativetoday.com, and usadailypolitics.com. They are almost all just paid trolls who basically ran to mess up things. And these Macedonians, according to reports, they don't even care about these politics. They are just responding to straightforward economic incentives. And as Facebook kind of reveals to people in their earnings reports, a United States Facebook user is worth about 4 times as user outside the United States. So the fraction of a penny per click of United States display advertising, which is a declining market for American publishers, yeah, that goes a long way in this village. So there are a bunch of teens and young men who just run these sites, and, you know, they have learned that the best way to generate traffic for them in ad revenue is to get their politics stories to spread on Facebook. And the best way how to do it is post sensational materials and crazy stuff so that you would get angry at this, and then people get shared. And interestingly enough, these guys are just not only guys who see profit, and they also obviously get some funding from certain interesting adversaries and people who might be interested in spewing this dissent here. And another quote from this article, quote, "The 3,000 ads that have been linked to Russia are a drop in the bucket, even if they did reach millions of people. The real game is simply that Russian operatives created pages that reach people organically, as the saying goes." Jonathan Albright, research director in the Tao Center for Digital Journalism at Columbia University, pulled data on the 6 publicly known Russia-linked Facebook pages. He found that their posts had been shared 340 million times, and those were 6 of the 470 pages that Facebook has linked to Russian operatives. And you're probably talking about billions of shares here, with who knows how many views, and with what kind of specific targeting. So, like I said, Putin is probably making sure that the radical shocking news that someone you know has shared are actually way more radical and way more crazy than what actually is going on. And this fact, this sensationalism and this craziness, it's just, and what's going on in Russia itself, like I said, this was all about this one movie Matilda. Because these people got into their heads that it's that Mr. Putin, the president, the bringer of the sacred Russian nation back again and whatever, that this is real and they have to do this. And you're all fascists in the West, so you must be manipulated, and they just laugh when massive hatred is going on there. And like I said, I fell for this. And I specifically fell for an article written by The Telegraph. No less, mind you. It was an article which said, "Student forces Cambridge to drop white authors." And this article was published in October 25th. And as I read it, what I saw there was the fact that a black lady had, a black student of this university, that she had written a petition, an open letter on students so that they would decolonize their English faculty. And so that, you know, and the article, as originally stated, presented this as the Cambridge University would be forced to replace white authors with black writers, and that, for example, Shakespeare would get caught, and a lot of, you know, classics would just get caught just because they're white. And it kind of stunned me, and I fell for this. It seemed like, hey, well, what's going on here? I didn't think. Well, turns out recently these guys in The Telegraph had posted a very, very tiny corrections and clarifications thing stating that, quote, "An October 25th article incorrectly stated that under proposals by academic staff, in response to an open letter from students on decolonizing its English faculty, Cambridge University will be forced to replace white authors with black writers. The proposals were in fact recommendations. Neither they nor the open letter called for the university to replace white authors with black ones, and there are no plans to do so. Essentially, what these students asked was a perfectly normal thing, that they would, you know, expand the curriculum of this English literature by including, you know, more people who are, well, not British, not in the classical sense, I mean, you know, they would like more people of color there, they like more Indians, you know, they just want a normal thing, they want the curriculum to expand according to the times, and they want more diversity there, because, yeah, you know, as you know, I probably would also be there, because, you know, I'm a foreigner, and I produce my content in English. So, you know, probably if we get big enough, hey, maybe we can begin some literature class somewhere, or podcasting class if they open one. So this is perfectly reasonable. Now, the problem is that the original article itself, even from The Telegraph, which I had thought was a decent, really respectable newspaper, these guys duped me by their, like, sensationalist radical thing. So, in conclusion here, like the article says there, which I just talked about, don't forget to adjust for Russian trolls. If you see something on the internet that seems ultra-radical and ultra-crazy, understand that, you know, it might not be someone It might not be like your fellow countrymen or fellow people, even those who you disagree with, are somehow gone crazy. Maybe the Antifa kids are just college kids and the radicals you see are A, either fake, or B, you know, it's why I wouldn't really be surprised if Putin would be funding some of the more radical elements of them, because that directly plays into his policy and propaganda that he's the most powerful anti-fascist ever. The thing is, the Russian news and the things you probably didn't know were these about Matilda, where real, weirdly enough, radical Orthodox terrorism and extremely radical Orthodox terrorism. And again, I'd like to say that this has nothing to do with the real Orthodox Church, and because they're very nice people, they're kind and generous, and they participate in a lot of charity. These guys have nothing to do with real Orthodoxy or real Christianity in any way or form. The fact is that you don't hear about the terror acts going on there. You don't hear about the really crazy radicalism that's going on there. But these guys, so that, you know, you would shift your attention elsewhere and shift your attention away from real problems or from actually crazy radical problems going on in Russia. Yeah, millions of reposts, millions of trolls, millions of Facebook accounts, just fake Facebook accounts. And the same thing goes on for the comment sections on like newspaper sites and everywhere. You have to be careful because, as a friend of mine stated, you can't throw out the baby with the bathwater just because some guys have great ideas, the other guys can just come over and radicalize them to no end. At the end, you really, really can't just read articles without double-checking them. You can't do that. Because, in a way, if you think that your fellow American or fellow Westerner, in my case, fellow European or fellow Latvian, he shared an article which is crazy weird and I don't understand. It's either shocking or like it's sensationalist or whatever. It's most likely not true. Because actually, everything is pretty boring. And, you know, you can make radical stuff out of everything. Because, like I said, these days, there are real radicals burning cars and burning cinemas and being crazy about a movie, an artistic movie, about Nikki II, who is somehow saint, even though he shot cannons at his own people. Just a food for thought, and I'm sorry for this episode being this way, but I just thought that at this moment where there's radicalism everywhere, and where it seems that the world is going to hell, well, it's not, actually. There are radicals out there in the places you wouldn't expect, but these radicals often hide behind, you know, noble goals, and try to kind of ruin everything for everyone. So this was The Eastern Border, and I hope you learned something from this episode, and we'll be back with Stalin next time. Just remember, adjust for the trolls, and be tolerant to each other, because most probably, if you're shocked by something you read on social media, it is most likely not true, and there are people out there who burn cinemas and support terrorism, and they do it in the name of fighting against fascism, even though they're, well, way more fascist than anything they could be possibly fighting against. These guys want you to argue. These guys want you to think that everything is super bad in whatever country you live in. Because then, by comparison, it might seem that the orderly state authority of Mr. Putin is safe, that there are no protests there, and that everything's going on nicely there. It's all in the head, people, and I'd like to promote critical reasoning here in this show. So that's about it for today. And don't fall for sensationalist articles. До свидания, товарищи.
Thank you for listening to The Eastern Border. If you have any comments or specific details you'd like to know, you're welcome to leave it in the comment section on our site, theeasternborder.lv, and we'll rummage even to the western border to find you an answer. Like this podcast? Subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, or on our RSS feed. Happiness is mandatory. Good reviews and donations feed the farmers of our kolkhoz in the great motherland. The Eastern Border salutes you. This podcast is part of the Dark Myths Collective. Visit darkmyths.org for more shows like this one. The darkness awaits.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.